This is Jim Engster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and from Jerry Lane Chevrolet. And we're visiting with one of our favorite guests, Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter from Washington, who's been in the Beltway now for about a half century. And he was there shortly after Watergate in 1972, and it was 50 years ago in 3 days, the anniversary was last Friday, that the break-in at the Democratic Party headquarters took place, and the world changed shortly thereafter. With Richard Milhouse Nixon teetering in the wind, he did win re-election, carrying 49 states against George Stanley McGovern. But on August 9, 1974, it was all over. And at that time, it was Republicans who told him it was over. Barry Goldwater went to the White House and said, "There's no support for you, Mr. President." In those days, there was bipartisan support when a president did something wrong. Today, as we know, there is not. There's no doubt that Donald Trump committed offenses that were against the country, and yet he is still the person who is the lord and ruler of the Republican Party, and that's evident by what's going on in Louisiana with our congressional delegation refusing to acknowledge the legitimacy of the 1-6 Commission or the legitimacy of the 2020 election. The only naysayer is Bill Cassidy, who, of course, voted to uphold the election, but all the others, John Kennedy, Garrett Graves, Steve Scalise, Clay Higgins, Mike Johnson, they all voted the other way. They all said the election was not legitimate. We'll talk about that with Dan, but Dan's developed quite a following here in Baton Rouge as a result, and in Louisiana with his appearances on this program. And when did you go to Washington, Dan Moldea? What was the first step toward the Beltway for the man from Ohio?
There was a contract out of me, Jim. Always a pleasure to be with you. It was a contract out of me. It wasn't a mafia contract, because if it was a mafia contract, I'd be long gone. But it was a bunch of Teamsters who were upset that I was testifying before a federal grand jury, or cooperating with a federal grand jury, let's put it that way, with regard to a goon squad that was running around shaking down trucking companies. And so I went to the and so a guy called me and gave me all the details. I recorded the conversation. I took the recording to my good friends at the FBI and the U.S. Strike Force Against Organized Crime. I said, "Listen to this," and I played the tape. And they said, "Gee, Dan, what are you going to do?" And I said, "What do you mean? What am I going to do? What are you going to do?" And they said, "What can we do? No crime's been committed." I said, "In order for a crime to be committed, I got to be dead." And they said, "All we can do is advise you to move to a neutral city." I said, "What's a neutral city?" They said, "A neutral city is a city in which no single mafia family controls the town, like Detroit is a controlled city, Chicago's a, New Orleans is a controlled city." I said, "Well, what's a non-controlled city?" They said, "Like Las Vegas, like Miami, like Washington, D.C., all of those towns are everybody's in those towns." And so I decided to move to Washington, D.C., and it's a long story about how the contract was finally derailed, but that's how it happened. I should say that the contract was for $1,500, and I was more insulted by the price than I was horrified by the fact that there was a contract out on me.
Well, fortunately, they didn't get you. And
that was in 1976, so I may have survived it.
Yeah, I think you've survived. And Dan has had a big part in Louisiana politics. Without his reporting, it's quite possible. Now, some people view this as a negative, but Bob Livingston would likely have been the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the man from Jefferson Parish. But also David Vitter would have been governor of Louisiana without Dan's reporting regarding Senator Vitter consorting with prostitutes in Washington, D.C. So, Dan, well done.
Grazie. Always a pleasure to be with you, Jim.
Well, it's good to talk with you. And before we get to what's going on in the Beltway now, it was 47 years ago, July 30th, 1975, when James Riddle Hoffa disappeared from the Red Fox restaurant in Detroit, near Detroit, and has never been seen again. And you, on previous appearances of recent vintage on this program, indicate you may know, based on an informant telling you, where Jimmy Hoffa's remains are.
That's right. We're waiting right now. I was just at a memorial service for a friend of mine in Ohio over the weekend, and I was afraid I was going to get the call saying, "Come to New Jersey." Basically what we believe happened, and the FBI in both the Detroit and Newark field offices, as well as the U.S. attorneys from both cities, executed a sworn statement last October and submitted it to the federal court in New Jersey, saying this is where we believe Hoffa's body is based on the information that I gave them. And the federal judge said this probable cause clearly exists that Hoffa's body is there. And so he granted a sealed search warrant. The FBI took it down, and on October 25th, 26th of 2021, they began their search for trace evidence and evidence in this alcove, excuse me, under the Pulaski Skyway in Jersey City, New Jersey. I've written quite a bit about it. And now we're waiting for them to go get it. I mean, if they had found nothing, again, we're talking about 6, 7, 8 months ago, it would be over. But we believe they're going back. We believe they're going to go for it. And hopefully there'll be some good news for all of us that this murder will finally be well on the track of being solved.
Well, 9 years ago, Dan Moldea was on our program talking about his autobiography, Confessions of a Guerrilla Rider, Adventures in the Jungles of Crime, Politics, and Journalism. And many of these stories are in his book, and he has written several other books and is probably the most versatile writer in Washington, D.C. And if I remember right, and I think I do, I think the first time I ever saw your face, you were on the Pat Sajak show talking about the NFL and problems in the National Football League. Is that right?
Yeah. I wrote a book called Interference, How Organized Crime Influences Professional Football in 1989. In which I predicted that the biggest disaster that could happen to this country is if a federal law was created which would legalize sports gambling nationwide. And what happened in 2018? The United States Supreme Court said legalize sports gambling everywhere. This is going to be an unmitigated disaster for all of professional sports, college sports, any sport in which sports gambling is used. It's going to be an unmitigated disaster. That's my prediction.
Well, we'll see. Those of us who love football, we're talking primarily about football, basketball too, though.
Right. Absolutely.
And even baseball for that matter. But we want to keep the trains rolling. But it is a prescription for at least the attempt to fix, and there are ways to do this, as we know, and chances are more games have been fixed than we know about. But let's hope that Dan is not accurate about this, but he usually is. Now, I mentioned how, particularly in the SEC states, the people in Congress, they refuse to buck Donald Trump, with few exceptions, Bill Cassidy being one of them. And Saturday, a good profile of what's going on from Jonathan Wiseman in the New York Times. He writes, it was all a lie, the tales of stuffed ballot drop boxes, rigged voting machines, and constitutional flexibility that would have allowed Vice President Mike Pence to nullify the 2020 election results and send them back to Republican state legislatures. The first three hearings of the House January 6th committee have deeply undercut, if not demolished, the post-election myths repeated incessantly by former President Trump and his supporters and embraced and amplified by Republicans in Congress. A parade of Republican witnesses, their attorney general, William Barr, his daughter, Ivanka Trump, his own campaign lawyers knew he lost the election and told him so. Mr. Trump was informed that the demands he was making of Mr. Pence to block his defeat unilaterally were illegal. Even the most active coup plotter, the conservative lawyer John C. Eastman, conceded before January 6th that his scheme was illegal and unconstitutional, then sought a presidential pardon after it led to mob violence. Yet the most striking revelation so far may be how deeply Mr. Trump's disregard for the truth and the rule of law have penetrated into the Republican Party, taking root in the fertile soil of a right-wing electorate stewing in conspiracy theories and well-tended by their media of choice. Your thoughts, Dan Moldea.
It's an unbelievable situation in which we almost lost our democracy in the midst of what is clearly and has been clearly described as an attempted coup against the United States government that had been orchestrated and engineered by the sitting president of the United States, who refused to accept defeat. Let me ask you a question, Jim. Did Bill Cassidy vote for one or both of the impeachments?
He voted for the second one.
He voted for the insurrection, the insurrection one.
Right. He did not vote for
the first. He's been, you know, I'm not a big fan of Cassidy, but I have to say that took some guts for him to do that. And, you know, kudos to that guy for, you know, taking that stand. I think the hearings are doing well. I think the hearings are getting through, especially the independents. I think people are starting to understand what a dangerous person Donald Trump is to our democracy. And the problem is that his base is even crazier than he is. And I think that most of these people who refuse to get away from Trump are doing so because they are afraid of the base, which is demanding these draconian, authoritarian movements, these anti-democracy movements. What happened? I'm sorry, go ahead.
We got to take a break, but we will return in 90 seconds with more from Dan Moldea. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 for Dan Moldea, the man from Ohio. He was at Kent State in 1970 when a tragedy occurred there. He and Nick Saban were students at that university. And all these years later, 52 of them, Dan Moldea is in Washington. And it's a turbulent place right now, isn't it?
It's on the verge of a civil war right now. I wanted to ask you about the John Cronin thing yesterday, where he got booed by his constituents, by right wingers. Did what was that about? Was that over the gun? His willingness to work with Democrats on gun legislation, or was it about something else? Do you know?
I think that's what it was about. Yeah. Of course, Beto O'Rourke, who's running for governor of Texas, is totally. Opposite, he wants to get rid of assault weapons, and this very mild bill that cleared the House of Representatives, the U.S. House.
Did we do that once before? Did we get rid of?
Yeah, we did. We did. We did.
And crime went down, and these shootings went down, and everything else, and then suddenly everything starts to gin up again. Anyway, it's tragic, yeah. And once again, I think that a lot of these politicians are reacting in the way they are reacting, supporting Trump, etc., because they're crazy base, these stubborn people who are demanding white supremacy, and I think it comes right down to that, don't want to give up that power, and as a consequence, the people who are elected office find themselves getting primaried if they move away from the crazy base.
Well, today, the Baton Rouge Advocate, Picayune, has a newspaper editorial in favoring the very soft gun safety measures that are being debated in Congress. But at the bottom of the editorial, there is in bold print a disclaimer saying the Advocate in no way is in favor of confiscating guns. That would be against the Second Amendment. So people are afraid of the gun lobby. Your story about John Cornyn, the Texas Republican Party rebuked him for his support of a bipartisan agreement on gun-related legislation. And as we know, this is a really, really a watered-down, almost nothing bill, but at least it's something. At least it's something. Right. And Cornyn, he got slammed for embracing that. And now he's having to say, but I'm still a Second Amendment guy. Well, that's the way things are in the South. And I thought of John Tower. I knew he was the first Republican senator in the South in modern time. I think it was 1969 he came to Washington. It was the first Republican senator from the South since 1913. And now in the 11 SEC states, of which Louisiana and Texas are a part, there are 22 senators and there are 20 Republicans and 2 Democrats, and the 2 Democrats are both in Georgia, and they both barely won. We're talking about Raphael Warnock and John Ossoff. They barely won their elections, and Warnock is now in a dead heat with Herschel Walker, who I would say an empty suit, but he's got lots of muscles in that suit, but apparently not much else, Dan.
Zero integrity, zero ability to tell the truth, but he'll go there and he'll vote right, and the crazy base will say, yeah, fine, Herschel, good job. In the meantime, Raphael is terrific. I mean, this guy is—he's charismatic. He is—he's Democratic future, in my opinion. And But nonetheless, you know, Herschel Walker is, I think Raphael's going to win. Let me put it there. I'm an optimist about these things. And I think because the alternative of the Republicans taking either the House or the Senate, let alone, God forbid, both in November is unthinkable, because what would happen is Biden would immediately be impeached for Afghanistan, or they would concoct falling off his bike yesterday or something. They would concoct some reason to get rid of him. And it's inevitable that this base is decided that they want an authoritarian form of government. I think this is all well thought out. I don't think these people are stupid. I do think they're crazy, but I think that they are, this is a well thought out plan. And, mm-hmm. and those who depart from that, in Congress, are not going to have jobs for very much longer.
Well, Herschel Walker was a Heisman Trophy winner at Georgia, the greatest running
great
back in
player.
History of the Southeastern Conference. But he
did he play for in the pros?
He played for Donald Trump's New Jersey Generals,
right.
Primarily.
That's right.
It was Dallas and I think Philadelphia. But anyway, he's lied about having a college degree. He's lied about being in the top 1% of his class. He's lied about a lot of things.
Yeah.
But here is Robin Dow's pulled it up. Here is Herschel in a recent interview with a friendly interviewer. By the way, he will not do any other kinds of interviews. But Herschel, even with a friendly interview, he says things that make you say, what? Here he is.
I'll tell you something else. Oh. I heard. Now, think about this. Because at one time, science said man came from apes. Did it not?
Every time I read or hear that, I think to myself, you just didn't read the same Bible I did.
Well, this was interesting, though. If that is true, why are there still apes? Think about it.
You know, now you're getting too smart for us.
No. Think about this. We have an evolution that is, we've gotten so intelligent that if that is true, why are there still apes? And then the conception of a baby. Let me tell you, science can't do that. They're still trying to do it.
Come on.
But it can't, because there had to be a God.
All right, that's Herschel Walker.
Yeah, Renaissance man. Yes.
Senator Walker.
Yes. It's a sad state of affairs, really.
That's Charlotte in Iberia Parish is first up for the great Dan Moldea. Hi, Charlotte. Good morning.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dan. I'd like to ask, when did the decision between the United States, as in number 45, and the people who took over Afghanistan decide that the United States had to pull out? And how many people did that person pull out until the new president took over?
All right. Well, I think she's alluding to the fact that Afghanistan was the
pullout.
It was
a deal.
Trump made a deal, right. He and Biden are largely in accord about that.
Right. And what Biden was doing was he was going along with the deal that Trump and the United States government had made with Afghanistan way back when. The other thing, too, is, you know, I mean, Afghanistan was a sad state of affairs. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. But who expected the president of Afghanistan to take off running and not try to marshal his troops and inspire his troops, as has Zelensky in Ukraine? I mean, if Zelensky had taken off when he heard the barbarians at the gate, he would have, Ukraine would have fallen immediately, just like Afghanistan, and there would have been these horrible scenes of people trying to escape the country. But Zelensky stood firm, whereas the president of Afghanistan fled. And so, once again, Afghanistan was as a result of a decision that Donald Trump had made and that the United States government had gone along with a year earlier before all of this had happened.
Don't think there's any doubt that President Zelensky of Ukraine is the man of the year, the woman. I mean, he is the person of the year for Time Magazine. He is the real deal.
David, he is the real deal.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on with Dan. Good morning.
David.
Good morning to my favorite guest.
My favorite caller. Go ahead, David. Show you apart with us today? Go ahead.
The Republican Party held that convention in Texas over the weekend, and they still will not recognize that President Biden is the legitimate president of the United States. Mr. Moldea, my question for you is, where does Trump face the most serious jeopardy of being indicted? I can think of several venues where this guy has violated state and federal laws, and also many civil regulations as well.
I think he's the most at risk in Georgia. That's from everything I'm hearing. He's most at risk in Georgia for what is clear evidence of him trying to...
In his own words.
Go ahead, Jim. Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah, get me 11,800 votes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, recorded. But, you know, Trump is... I think there are more dangerous people than Trump out there. And I think that... I think the Republican Party is going to turn to those people. Once Trump is out and the Republican Party starts to throw him under the bus because they realize how bad he is for the party, they're going to turn to somebody else. They're going to turn to the governor of Florida. They're going to turn to somebody like Tom Cotton. They're going to turn to somebody. And I think these guys are even more dangerous than Trump. What keeps Trump afloat is his money, his billions of dollars, where he's able to afford the attorneys that he must hire to, I don't know if he's paying them, but he must hire in order to survive. And I think the money goes a long, long way towards his survival.
877-217-5757. Time for a short break, and we will return with the intrepid Dan Moldea after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us. A bit more time with Dan Moldea, the great American reporter. Your number is 877-217-5757. Robin Dow is producing. And acknowledgement that today is a federal holiday in Washington. It is Juneteenth. It was a state holiday on Friday in Louisiana, and it first state, by the way, we've slammed Texas a few times in recent vintage, but Texas did this, I think, back in 1980, long time ago, and of course, it took some time in Washington. The president who made it happen is the guy in office, Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. What about him falling off his bike? Does that mean it's curtains that he's toast, Dan Moldea?
I think Joe Biden was the greatest vice president we've ever had with the great Barack Obama. And I feel badly for what he's in the midst of. It's difficult to watch him talk sometimes. It's difficult to watch him walk. But he is our president, and his mind is right and on the right things, I think, although it's difficult for him sometimes to articulate exactly what he wants to say. He's a warrior who is sort of in an emeritus kind of a situation now. But who can beat the forces of evil on the other side right now, the hardcore right wing? There's some responsible Republicans out there who I think really want to do the right thing. Like I said, I'm not a big fan of Bill Cassidy or Cronin, but I got to hand it to both of these guys for what they've been doing recently. We have this situation where we are playing the cards we're dealt with right now. And I think that Joe Biden I don't think I disagree too much with Pete. I think he should just announce he's not running for re-election. He's going to spend the rest of his term not politicking, but trying to solve the problems of this country. And I really think that that would go a long way for him, because I don't think anyone really takes seriously that Joe Biden is going to be running for re-election.
But he might. And
I can't even imagine it. I can't even imagine it. Really.
Well, and his poll numbers are low, but so are Kamala Harris's. Who do the Democrats have waiting in the wings? Is there an anointed candidate? I don't think so.
I think people have to start emerging. But who wants to get into public life these days? I mean, it's crazy how nutty the political system has become. And the extremes where here you have a situation where the Republican Party has been pulled so far to the right, which is leaving this gaping hole in the middle for centrists like me to say, hey, let's grab some of these center right people. And instead, you have these people on the left, these far left progressives in the Democratic Party, who and with this short majority in the House and in the Senate are trying to pull the Democrats further to the left, and you have this big gaping hole in the middle just wanting to get loyal to somebody, to vote for somebody, and the extremes in both parties are winning. And it's sad because there's so much that can be done.
Well, I agree with Bill Maher that optically, the best candidate for the Democrats would be the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, who's almost
as tall
as you. He's Hollywood handsome. Imagine him on the same stage with Donald Trump. And he, of course, was married to the girlfriend of Trump Jr.
Right,
so
exactly.
He would drive the Trumps
crazy.
I do
hold that against him. Because talk about wacky people. She's right up there at the top five or six, I think, yeah.
Skipper and Gonzalez. Skipper, you're on with Dan Moldea. Hi, Skipper.
Hello. Evening. I wanted to just point out one thing. There's a lot we could talk about. But in the Georgia issue with Trump, if I called up and asked you to give me or fine me $10,000, it may be foolish, it's not going to happen, but it's not illegal. If I ask you to print me $10,000, that is illegal. I have yet to hear anybody state that Trump wanted them to fabricate, print, bring up fake votes. He simply wanted them to find them, which last time I checked was totally legal.
Well, you would make a good defense attorney for him, Skipper, but... He of course, has tried to negate a fair election, there's no doubt, and he's got a lot of people helping him, including almost the entire Louisiana delegation. But some listeners have asked me to ask you about the 1-6 Commission, and perhaps the biggest mystery is whether Jenny Thomas, the wife of Clarence Thomas, will appear. She is right in the middle of all this, and Clarence, on a couple of votes, has indicated that he's right with her as far as denying the legitimacy of the election. Clarence Thomas, it would seem, has a conflict of interest based on his wife's actions and him being complicit in her trying to overthrow the election. She was in touch with just about all the major players based on recorded transcripts and what Mark Meadows, they have the text messages. What do you think?
Are you talking to me?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I lost my train of thought.
Jenny Thomas.
Right. There is no ethical overseer of behavior by the United States Supreme Court, with the exception of the people, if they decide to remove somebody from office. I don't see Clarence Thomas, who was completely defiant, doing anything to remove himself from the situation. I don't think that since Scalia left, that was his sort of his mentor on the court. I don't see him doing anything except for exactly what he wants to do. And thus, I think he'll continue to stay on. I think he'll continue to vote. I don't see Clarence Thomas recusing himself. I do see his wife testifying before the January 6th committee. I do see that happening.
Well, let's hope she does. And if she does, she may be able to explain some of these things. But there's a lot of explaining to do. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, you're on with Dan Moldea. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, Mr. Moldea. I know Barack Obama promised to close Guantanamo, and that didn't happen. We have been promised that we would see Trump's taxes, and I doubt that that will ever happen. What are you going to take as a sure sign that that this is really going to doom our government? Because nobody's going to get punished. I doubt anyone is going to get punished for the riots. Thanks.
I think that's a very good point. I believe the Attorney General and the Department of Justice are working hard on a case. I don't think it's getting a lot of attention because I think it's being done so secretly. When you run an investigation, you don't start with the top guy and get him in deposition and try to trip him up. You start at the bottom and you work your way up. You're talking to this low-level people and you're flipping him and you're moving up the ladder and flipping those people, and then eventually you get to the top guys. I cannot believe that, considering all the evidence, that the ex-president of the United States, while still in office, tried to overthrow the United States government, that's not worthy of a major investigation by the Department of Justice. I believe that investigation is going on in earnest, and I believe that there will be it'll be augmented by the information that's coming out from the January 6th committee hearings, which I think are so impressive. I think it's so amazing the way they put this thing together, where almost all the witnesses are Republicans and Trump appointees. Liz Cheney, the best comment of the whole thing was where she said on that opening day in her opening statement, where she said, "A message to my Republican colleagues and words to the effect of, Trump one of these days will be gone, but you will be left with the dishonor of your decisions to support him." And that was, again, I'm no fan of Liz Cheney, but she deserved that apparently she won a Profiles of Courage Award. And as far as I'm concerned, she deserved it. I hope she wins re-election in her district in Nebraska, or Wyoming, rather.
Yeah, and in her district, it's the whole state. It is ironically
right.
harder to get elected to the U.S. House in Wyoming with one seat than it is the U.S. Senate with two seats, but that's the way it is. Wyoming, Dan, to show you how small it is smaller than Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the whole state of Wyoming. So
amazing.
And they have
amazing.
Two U.S. senators, and then California with 40 million people has two U.S. senators. So
the system works.
Yeah, well, it is our system, but the Electoral College, of course, is all messed up, and Democrats have won six of the last seven elections for president based on the vote.
Right.
And yet they only have four out of seven to count, and the Republicans have control of the Supreme Court. And five of the six Republican justices were put in place by presidents who did not win the overall vote.
Right.
Think of that.
It's a hell of a situation right now. It really is.
Jimmy Carter, one-term president, no Supreme Court justices. Donald Trump, one-term president, three Supreme Court justices. Trump is, in addition to everything else, he's really lucky.
He sure is. I mean, he's lucky that he's evaded the long arm of the law. And once again, I believe it's because he's able to afford the attorneys he needs to obstruct the system and to continue to appeal things to the highest court in the land, things that should have been decided at the lowest possible level. I mean, the idea that he continues to have influence in this country is mind-blowing to me, after all he's done and all the damage he's done to this country. But once again, I believe the responsible Republican people will reject him in 2024. I think they're using him as a tool to get there, to win the 2022 midterms, but I believe they will reject him roundly and soundly reject him in 2024.
Well, the Democrats may want Donald Trump to be the opponent. He may be the only Republican a Democrat can defeat in 2024.
You might be right there, Jim, but I just think that the damage that Donald Trump creates to any situation he comes into, because he has no standard, no ethics, no integrity, no honesty, no ability to make good decisions, and the inability to care about anybody but himself. And the fact that he's on this revenge tour, which is really the only reason I think he wants to go back to the White House. He wants to take his revenge on the people who double-crossed him. And I think he has no interest in governing. He has no interest in public policy. He just wants to get back in. He wants the power so that he can take his revenge on the people who double-cross him and to reward those people who have kept him on the public's radar screen.
Dan Muldea, always a pleasure. Thank you. We'll keep
always
calling.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
See you soon. Thank you, Dan. Back after this. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. And in studio is Suzanne DePlanis. She's an award-winning chef, restaurant veteran, creator of the food waste blog Makeover My Leftover, also a certified health education specialist. She's competed in national and international cooking competitions, a successful competitor at the World Food Championships, and Suzanne is here, and her book is Lagniappe Leftovers. And good morning to you, Suzanne.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Nice to talk with you. Well, we're in austere times, at least comparatively so. Suddenly, cost of food has gone up, up, and away, and it costs more to dine at home, costs more to eat out, and now leftovers may have some appeal they didn't have so long ago. Your thoughts?
That's right. Leftovers, some people have a look at it in a negative way, but I say turn it into something positive and look at leftovers as start-overs.
I like that. Leftovers as start-overs. And the book, by the way, Lagniappe Leftovers, is out and about today.
Today. Launch day today.
Today. Arcadia Publishing. Louisiana Publishing House, right?
Pelican Publishing out of New Orleans. It's under Arcadia Publishing.
Around. Very good. And people know Suzanne in this community. You've been at restaurants for many, many years.
Over 22 years in the restaurant industry as well.
What's your favorite restaurant in Baton Rouge?
Oh, now you can't do that to me. You can't do that to me. Mansour's is one of my favorites.
There you go. You named a good one. Named a real good one. Yeah, yeah. Mansour's is good. But Leftovers have some appeal. And, you know, I was an only child, but my mother, of course, was on a limited budget. Raising me after my father died, so I'm accustomed to Leftovers, but there's nothing wrong with it, and sometimes they're better than the real deal, aren't they?
Absolutely, and this book, Lagniappe Leftovers, I take classic Southern dishes and use the leftovers from that to purpose it into new meals that those that don't like leftovers will not even recognize.
Well, what are some of the best leftovers?
You know, in Louisiana, you can't make a small batch of gumbo or red beans and rice, so... You know, gumbo sloppy joes. That's one of my husband's absolute favorite ones.
And your husband is Chris Andrews.
Reverend Chris Andrews. Yeah, actually. Yeah. And our anniversary is this Saturday. And this Saturday I'll be at Brouhaha from 10 to noon, signing my books with a little Lagniappe. Those that buy the book there. And Barnes & Noble the same day from 2 to 4. And I'm excited about that signing because joining me will be Dr. Tom Quaid, who's the local talented artist who's actually illustrated my cookbook and designed the cover as well.
Well, it's Lagniappe Leftovers, and both Suzanne and Reverend Andrews, they're people who care about staying in shape. Of course, what we eat is often the major culprit in being in and out of shape. Exercise is important, but diet is just as, if not more important. What about leftovers? If you have a high-calorie meal, do you want to do it all over again, or what are your thoughts?
And that's something in the cookbook that I do take. You know, leftovers save jambalaya and turn it into a healthy salad. So you can definitely save some calories and time with leftovers. And like you said, the cost of food nowadays, we really need to get back to our true value. And one of those values was value of food. That's how I learned in my grandmother's kitchen, something left over from breakfast made its way into lunch, and something left over from lunch made it into dinner.
Well, you know what you're talking about. And when did you first start cooking?
I say I grew up on a step stool in my meemaw's kitchen. That's where I first got my love to be in the kitchen. And then, of course, I took one semester off from college to get a restaurant job as a server and just fell in love with the industry and quickly worked my way up to general manager and catering chef.
Well, Poppy Tooker, who has a program on this station, Louisiana Eats, she says Suzanne is out to save the world one leftover at a time. You'll think twice before ever throwing edible food away again. Now, I see at the LSU Suites on Saturday nights, food galore, good food, and it's just thrown out. In fact, you can't even take it with you. There's a rule against it, I guess, because of health.
It's really, we need to change that. We have the Good Samaritan Act, which actually covers you in case something would happen to you if you did take the food. So we really need to change the look of food and donate the food.
Donate it, and it would be eaten, I'm sure.
Right. You know, restaurant leftovers itself, 55% of restaurant leftovers go to waste. So you think about an average salad price nowadays, $15. If you're leaving half of that salad on the table, plus your tip, you're leaving a lot of money on the table.
Yeah, and of course, people go to restaurants for any number of reasons, to do business deals, to socialize, to date, you name it, but going way beyond the food, so it's a total experience, but the food is expensive now. Right. And if you go to a restaurant, and it used to be that you could save a lot of money when you dined out at one of these nice places, like Mansour's, if you didn't drink, but now... You can roll up a pretty big tab even if you just have coffee like I do on most occasions.
Right. And it's not just the food. When we waste food, we waste all the resources that go into that food. When I conduct my food waste workshops, I have a gallon of water. And I ask people, if I stood up here and poured out 25 gallons of water, would you think I'm crazy? Well, of course everybody would. But have you ever thrown away an apple? That's how much water is wasted by throwing away one apple.
Really? Now, you're an authority on Southern dishes. What constitutes a Southern dish as opposed to a Northern dish or Western dish?
The etouffee, the Creoles. I did a signing for the American Queen Voyages this last week, and they didn't even know how to say Lagniappe, more or less what an etouffee was. So definitely those red beans and rice Mondays, of course, that we have here.
Well, it is a book that delves into all of our passions in Louisiana, and one of the things we really do well is food. Is the food better here? I know you've traveled some too. When you travel, do you get meals as good as they are here?
I definitely do not. That's why I'll never move away from here. The food is just too good.
Well, how is it when you compete in these competitions? You probably bring something literally to the table that others don't.
I always say no matter where I go, I always want to stay true to myself. So all those classic Southern flavors that I grew up with, I bring it. I'm always blackening something and adding some boudin into something that I cook and staying true to who I am.
Mm-hmm. Now, a listener notes that you have done some recipes for national brands.
I have.
I did not know this. What are you doing?
That's kind of what I do on my side job. Just creating recipes for some national brands out there. You know, if you're flipping through a magazine and you see a recipe, 10 to 1, it might be one of my recipes.
Really?
Really?
Really. I'll be darned. That's great. And I love your bio. It says she lives in Baton Rouge with her husband, Chris, and her donkey, Fred.
I had to put Chris first. I really wanted to put my love of my life, my donkey, Fred.
A donkey? Okay. Not a cat, not a dog.
A donkey. That Chris gave me for a gift for Christmas one year.
Well, that's Chris is a man who definitely thinks outside the box.
And that's the key to my cookbook, actually, thinking outside the ice box.
Outside the ice box. Lagniappe leftovers from Suzanne Duplantis. Now, I know you have an appreciation. We've talked about prices going up, and they're going up whether you eat at home or eat out. But people who work in restaurants, they do hard work, don't they? No matter where they are in the restaurant.
Absolutely.
Whether they're on the floor or in the kitchen, it's not for everybody. It's a tough job.
Tough, long hours, hard to keep everybody happy at home, too, when you're working in the restaurant industry.
And sometimes you have to take abuse from patrons, don't you?
You do. Yeah. The customer's not always right.
Who's the biggest jerk you ever waited on?
Oh, no. I am not going to go there.
I was hoping you'd name names, but
maybe off the air,
we're not even going to get initials from Suzanne Duplantis, but you started when you were a little girl, and this is a passion that's evolved over time, and there are lots of chefs out there, but as we know, even in the celebrity world, there's some that are better than others, and people tell me that you're quite good. And you got into this a little bit later than most people do.
I did. You know, if I had to do it all over again, I probably would go to culinary school, but I didn't have the chance to do that. I think it's a constant mm-hmm. learning process. You have good days in the kitchen, mm-hmm. successes, and you have messes, but even sometimes messes turn into a success. I spilled my mimosa one morning when I was making a quiche, and now I always add a little champagne and orange juice uh-huh. when I make my quiche because it just makes it extra fluffy.
And a listener, speaking of chefs, says it's been a while since you had John Foles on. He's one of the good ones. And in Louisiana, we do tend to produce people who are well-known in the food industry. And John Foles is still, he's the legend.
He is. And actually, I did a book signing at Barnes & Noble Metairie this last weekend. And they put my book on the shelf in between John Foles' book and Leah Chase's book. So that, for a New Orleans girl and Louisiana mm-hmm. girl, was beyond excited.
Well, Foles does these huge, huge books. You could get a workout. You don't even need to go to the gym. Just lifting his books.
So. Yeah. And he was an inspiration for my cookbook years ago with one of his first ones that I met him when he did one of his book tours in New Orleans. But my food waste really got started in the restaurant industry, seeing the food waste mm-hmm. from the customer's refusal to take home their food. So I'd walk through and I'd ask, would you like to take a to-go box home? And they you just say, no, it's yeah. not good the next day. I'd go in the back, grab a to-go box, and pin a quick little recipe on the top of the box and bring it to the customer right. and said, hey, take this home and you'll have great potato pancakes in the morning.
Well, Tom on Bluebonnet says you and the Reverend should open a restaurant.
I don't know about a restaurant, but we are working on a book together.
I think a restaurant would be good.
He doesn't have the patience.
Yeah, but can you imagine Chris Andrews as a greeter? You get a blessing before you have...
It would be a great blessing before the food. We are working on a book together, though.
Really?
We are.
About food?
It's a mixture of food and also his meditations. So it's something for the body and also the
mind. For the soul?
Absolutely
like
right.
That? Okay. Well, it's Lagniappe Leftovers, and it's available in various places, but... You've got two book signings Saturday, 10 to 2 Brouhaha, and Barnes & Noble is?
2 to 4 with Dr. Tom Quaid signing books along with me there as well.
And Tom Quaid is a cardiologist.
Retired cardiologist and extremely talented artist. He truly brought my cookbook to life.
Well, thank you, Suzanne DePlantis, and congratulations.
Thank you very much for having me.
And First Financial Tax and Accounting Services and Jerry Lane Chevrolet provide signature support for this program. Tomorrow, Franklin Foyle with us to talk about redistricting. Until then, stay safe and stay tuned.